20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. Super excited to be joined by the one and only Jacob Westendorf. You can find him on social media at Jacob Westendorf, Pack-A-Day Podcast, of course, and Packers on SI. And Wisco Grant, Grant Bills, Wisco Sports Show, again, on social media at Wisco Grant. Fellas, the Packers did not win. We do not care. We are on to the Bears. Bring on Chicago. How the heck are you guys feeling?
I can't complain, man. This is high stakes football, right? So every game here, there is no more meaningless glorified preseason game, which is exactly what I think you could call today's game. But there's no more, you know, it's win or go home, to use the old tired line, I guess. But it is going to be really exciting for the third time ever, it's Packers Bears in the playoffs.
To speak specifically on the Vikings game, Andy, I think you tweeted something about it. Like, I'm glad it felt over right when it started. Because I think had it come down to the wire and been close, we would have had these conversations about, like, then we would have treated it like a football game. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to treat a not real football game like it's a football game. So I'm glad they spared us of that. They also didn't give us anything worth watching, but I'm glad that we don't have to sit around and talk about a not football game like it's an actual football game.
Stakes sometimes are a pain in the ass. And we have lived through a season and a lot of playoffs where it feels like at all times, everything's always at stake. And this one, nothing was at stake. And I'll be honest, it was kind of nice. It was kind of nice just sitting back and not having to worry about much and just, you know, kind of taking that week off. And then, of course, now next week, the stakes are higher than ever. It feels like maybe since Packers, Bears, and the NFC champ, well, obviously the Super Bowl is higher stakes. But you get my point. This is extremely high stakes coming up this week. We got to enjoy the 3:30 p.m. games or 3:25 p.m. games where, you know, we saw Chicago lose to Detroit, which I think we probably would have all thought, at least kind of expected going in, that probably would have meant that Green Bay was going to Philly. And there were multiple times throughout the course of those games where it looked like Green Bay was going to go to Philly. Washington comes up with the win against the Eagles. And so despite Chicago losing to Detroit, and they're on their own little two-game losing streak to end the season here, Green Bay does, in fact, go to Chicago. Grant, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on Packers, Bears, and Green Bay getting a shot at Chicago in the wild card round?
I've thought for about 2 months that there's not really an opponent in the NFC against which the Packers would draw dead. Like, there's no one, and maybe we should feel that way about the Seahawks because Sam Darnold's played pretty well down the stretch, but there's not an opponent, or there hasn't been an opponent in the NFC where I'm like, well, if that's who they draw, then they're cooked. So I was kind of excited or okay with the matchup against any opponent long before we ever knew the seeding. And I think Bears, Eagles are probably both similar. I think the Packers opened as small favorites. I don't feel awesome about them just because of the injuries and the way they've played recently. However, I like their chances against the Bears better because I think the Bears just have a lot less talent than the Eagles do. And I think the Bears could play a bad game and the Packers could beat them. The Eagles could play a bad game, an ugly game, a clunky game, and still beat the Packers just off the strength of, like, you have a nasty D-line that covers up for a lot of things. The Bears don't necessarily have that position group or that thing where it's like the game could be ugly and the Packers could play pretty well, but the Bears are still going to win because of ABC, XYZ, and they don't really have that thing. So, Packers win, it'll feel like it'll kind of be hilarious because we'll have ended the Bears season after they won that game a couple of weeks ago. So that would be pretty funny, but I'm scared of the alternative, unfortunately. And that's why the Eagles might have actually been okay with the Eagles just to avoid that whole thing, that rivalry thing, you know?
Jacob?
Yeah, they call it a rubber match, right? Round three, no mercy. It's the way of the fist. So it's the game that I think if you're a Packers fan, you sign up for at the beginning of every season. I think if you talk about, I think Grant just mentioned, the Bears don't really have what thing that you think is sustainable are they really good at? They take the football away. They do that a lot. I guess that was sustainable throughout a 17-game season. But when Jordan Love has been healthy, the Packers really haven't given the ball away all that much. They had two turnovers the last time they played against Chicago, but both of them were after Love exited the game. And I think both of them were kind of fluky. I don't like to use that term, but that is kind of the case on how that is. Josh Jacobs fumbling, that doesn't happen a ton. Malik Willis fumbling a snap. That is something that I guess could come into play because Sean Ryan's only playing like his fifth or sixth game as the team center. So something to watch in these games that are smaller. But on the offensive side of the ball, Chicago can run it, but they really haven't run it as well. They've run it okay against Green Bay the two times that they played them, but they haven't run it that well. And the other thing is, like, they've played 120 minutes against each other, and Green Bay's been the better team for 118 of them. 100, I guess more than 120 minutes, but 120 minutes in regulation. And Green Bay was better for 118 of them. Unfortunately, the last 2 minutes of the game in Chicago and in overtime, they were abject disasters, which is a big reason why this game is at Soldier Field instead of Lambeau Field this week. But I do not think the Packers would have beaten the Eagles next week. Grant kind of laid out some of the reasons why the Eagles can play ugly. They have that championship pedigree. Matt LaFleur's never beaten a team coached by Nick Sirianni. How much that would matter in a game like this, I don't know. But, I mean, the Eagles, they just also have star power that with Tucker Kraft and Micah Parsons on the sideline, the Packers just don't really have outside of their quarterback position, which maybe that can be the equalizer. Chicago, I feel like, of all the teams they could have played in the first round, which I guess was two of them coming into today, you got to feel good about your chances. You know, I mean, how good can you feel about a team on a four-game losing streak? Three with an asterisk, if you want to toss one next to today's game, I'm certainly welcome to do it. I'd like to know when you guys knew, if you hadn't seen Clayton Tune, when did you realize this was not going to go well? Because it took me all of one pass attempt. So God bless Clayton Tune. Good luck to you, man. But I think you're going to be professional in something other than football at some point in the near future. But first thoughts are, I think this is exactly what you want. I think Green Bay is set up to potentially, and that's an ugly word, but potentially go on a run. They could beat Chicago, and then the following week they would play Mike McDonald and Sam Darnold, who Mike McDonald's a rookie head coach as far as the playoffs go. And we've seen Darnold melt down before, and I had the numbers earlier. I think it's like rookie quarterbacks and head coaches are 19 and 44 or something like that against teams who have a quarterback that are not facing their first playoff starts. Jordan Love's obviously started a playoff game. Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson have not done that together. So from a intangibles standpoint, the only thing really working against Green Bay is the fact that they're at Soldier Field, but the Packers have lost twice there in the last 10 years. So it's not, you know, that's not the home field advantage that it usually is. And it really is. I speak as somebody who does that trip all the time. It's not that far. So it's not even really a real road game.
No, I'm with you. Grant, I played with the idea all week of this season's just been a pain in the ass all the way along. And do I really want it to end on a loss to the Bears just to have one more kick in the nuts before we end the 25-26 season? And there was a part of me that did definitely have that feel of like, man, I just want to, you know, avoid the worst possible scenario after a season that's been underwhelming to then go to Chicago in the divisional round or the wildcard round and lose and send Chicago to the divisional round and have to put up with that all throughout the offseason. That's we now face a potential worst case scenario of losing to the Bears in the wildcard round. That would just be absolutely terrible. It'd be the worst thing. So yeah, that would suck. But the more and more I got through this game, and the more I was, you know, you know how you kind of don't know how you feel until like the game actually kicks off, and you want, like, as soon as the game kicked off, I'm like, oh yeah, I want the Bears. Like there was no doubt. I kind of wanted this exact scenario because I wanted the Bears to lose this game, but I still wanted to face Chicago. So I found myself kind of pulling for the Lions a little bit, or at least rooting against the Bears, but also pulling for Washington at the same time. And we just kind of got that perfect scenario, that Goldilocks scenario, where it fit just right and Green Bay got what they wanted. It's a really unique scenario in the fact that Chicago, I think, probably gets what they want, the number two seed, and Green Bay. I bet they didn't want one of the NFC West teams or anything. I don't think they wanted any of that. And Green Bay didn't probably want Philly or, you know, well, they obviously only would have been Philly here, but they wanted Chicago too. And I think the NFL wanted it. I think the rubber match is perfect. I just think this is a beautiful game for the NFL. I'm assuming it's going to be, as we're recording this, we don't know if it's going to be the Sunday 4:30 game or the 7 p.m. game, but Jacob, I know you had something you wanted to add there.
Yeah, just a funny quote from Javon Bullard after the game was that they asked him, like, who would you rather play, Chicago or Philly? And of course, he can't answer that question because if you get the other team or something, it's easy Baltimore material. And he goes, well, we want both, so I don't really care. So I just thought that was kind of cool that, like, from a mindset standpoint, this team is exactly where you would want them to be. Just talking about, they really have bought into the whole, it's a clean slate, everything like that. Or at least they were saying the right things after the game was over. But I thought that quote from Bullard was cool. Like, yeah, well, we want to play both of them. So yeah, give us both.
This is why I'm happy that the world doesn't operate like WWE or AEW, because the general manager, Roger Goodell, would come out and set up a triple threat match for this coming Sunday, Philly, Green Bay, Chicago, you know, NFC North, or NFC divisional round you know, stakes in a pole match or something like that. So these are times where I'm happy that things don't work like wrestling. But yeah, I love the answer from Javon Bullard. And I want Chicago, and I'm so happy they got Chicago. And I will be up until if they lose that game. But I think the more that today went on and the game went on, the more I was sound of mind in wanting Chicago for this game.
I wonder how it'll feel when it starts. The second it kicks off, I wonder how I'll feel. Maybe I'll switch up. I don't know. The second the game starts, I might be excited, but I think I'm going to dread it until then.
That's fair. What were you going to say, Jacob?
I said, what happened the last time you went to Soldier Field, Andy?
The last time I went to Soldier Field?
Yeah. Didn't you go in the summer and that was a disaster?
Oh, well, no, that was the greatest thing ever. I didn't go to Soldier Field. I was on my way to Soldier Field. I got to Chicago right outside of Soldier Field, and the Packers traded for Micah Parsons. So, that was a good day. That was a very good day. Hopefully something similar happens this time. Obviously, the last time the Packers were in Chicago, it was not a good day. It was 2014 NFC Championship game all over again. So Green Bay's got some receipts. They're going to want revenge for that one. And hopefully, you know what would be great is if Romeo Doubs just had, you know, Brandon Bostic never got the opportunity to rebuttal after his mistake. Romeo gets to Romeo's credit, he bounced back immediately the following week and had a really good game. But this would be a sweet one if Romeo came out and had, you know, 7 catches, 160 yards, 2 touchdowns, game-winning touchdown or something like that. That would be a really awesome moment for Romeo Doubs. But he gets an opportunity at a hell of a rebuttal this week, and I hope he takes advantage of it.
Yeah, he's been in Green Bay's won one playoff game since the 2020 NFC title game, and Doubs was, 150 yards receiving on 7 catches against the Cowboys. So, you know, for better or worse, he's the guy that Jordan Love, you know, when the chips are down, it was Aaron Rodgers was looking for Jordy Nelson back in those days. And now it seems like when Love escapes, he's trying to find Romeo Doubs too. So I think there's a really good opportunity for him to have a game like the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so too. We're going to obviously have time all throughout this week to break down this game. I don't want to go into it in too great a detail now. Obviously, it's still pretty fresh that, you know, we know who Green Bay's playing and things like that. But just kind of a quick top of your mind key to this game, something you're going to be watching or what you think could ultimately decide the outcome in this one. Grant, I'll let you go first. What's kind of top of mind for you of what you're going to really be watching for in this one?
The defense has to look like it looked in Chicago and not at home against Baltimore. Not just like, I think a lot of people blame the defense for losses when it's maybe not to blame. I think the last couple of years, like the Eagles game, the Niners game, the last few years in the postseason wasn't on the defense. The offense had chances to win it and they couldn't do it. But I mean, if they give up, you know, production on the ground like they did against Baltimore, they're drawing dead in this game because Ben Johnson will just pound it over and over and the game will, you know, slowly bleed out and die. So I guess that's where this game starts for me. You just have to cross your fingers and hope Jordan Love steps right back in and the offense look like it's looked with him there all year long, right? Like you just kind of have to assume that that's going to happen. The question for me then is, can they stop the run and apply themselves on defense like they did 3 weeks ago and not 2 weeks ago or a week ago against Baltimore? And I still don't really understand how that defense strung together 2 performances in a row like that. I don't understand how they went into Chicago and performed that way and then rolled up the next week and performed the way they did against Baltimore. So I'm going to need to see which version of the Packers defense, especially their front, shows up on. I assume the game will be Sunday at 3:30. We don't know yet. That would be my guess. But that needs to be the version of the defense that shows up. Otherwise, I just don't see how they win this game.
Jacob?
Yeah, I'm going with the speed that Green Bay has on offense against Chicago's secondary. And you've seen it each time they've played. The last time Green Bay played, they didn't score on some of the chunk plays that they were able to generate down the field. But there was a play. Malik Willis has Christian Watson for like a walk-in touchdown, and he instead throws to Luke Musgrave for, it's like, it's great. You threw for a 30-yard play to Musgrave, but you know, you had a touchdown on the other side. I think Love finds the touchdown, for example, if that were to happen this week. But the first time these two teams played, we've got that awesome Bo Melton story, of course, which happened on the 45-yard touchdown that happened just before halftime. And then Christian Watson had 2 for over 20 yards in that game as well. So, every touchdown that Green Bay had against Chicago through the air the first time they played was an explosive play. And if you watch Chicago play throughout the course of the year, really, they struggle with guys who have that long speed, especially guys that can play in the middle of the field. You know, Andy, you know how I feel about Jaquan Brisker, but I've never seen somebody who talks so much with so little production throughout the course of his time. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, also not the fleetest of foot Kevin Byard does a lot of good things, but he's also not very fast. So Green Bay's speed is something, if they can protect, and I do think against this front, they can protect against these guys, especially if they get Zach Tom back, which I believe they will. I think if he was, if today's game mattered more, he would have been healthy enough to play. So that would be a big boost for Green Bay's offensive line next week as well. But if they can generate those explosive with Jordan Love taking care of the football, which I know their reputation and all that stuff, but just the turnover prone stuff that follows them, this just hasn't been true for this season. So I'm not overly worried about that, but Chicago's defense, they are very good at taking the ball away. But if they're, you know, if Chicago's defense doesn't take the ball away, I really do think this is a game where you could see some fireworks from Green Bay's offense, just like you did the first time they played.
Yeah, I think so too. There's no defense right now that I would rather play from a being able to generate explosive play standpoint than Chicago's. And Green Bay, Matt has just owned it. Like you said, there, Jayden Reed was open all game in that game with the Malik Willis at quarterback. And if Malik sees a couple of those, a couple of them, you just need a little bit more time. But like in both of those games against Chicago, there are wide receivers running free all over the field. Like Green Bay is going to have opportunities to put up big time explosives and I think points and have a lot of point production. We saw what San Fran did against them just a couple weeks ago. I don't think there's any limit. I think Green Bay will probably limit themselves more than what Chicago's defense is going to limit Green Bay in that game, which excites me. Just to go back to injuries really quick. Matt basically did state that anybody that was inactive in today's game, he thinks is going to be able to play next week. We'll get through the injury report here in just a moment as well, but that's a really good sign. That would mean Zach Tom, Dontavian Wicks. Who was the other inactive? That was
Josh Jacobs is healthy.
Josh Jacobs was a healthy scratch, and then there was one other one too that was inactive. But either way, all of those players are ultimately going to be good to go in this game. It was Malik Willis. Malik Willis was the other inactive that was injured. So they should be all good to go, which is a great sign. And we'll just have to kind of see what the injuries were from this one. Meanwhile, in Chicago, DJ Moore did leave this game for just a tiny bit. He did return. It doesn't seem like there's much there. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, he looked like he was knocked out into a in totally different universe and had what looked like a pretty serious concussion. I don't want to speculate on anything, but yeah, that did not look good, and that could be one to kind of keep an eye on for Chicago as well in this game. As far as just kind of the what I'm going to be watching for, Packers have the better quarterback, and this is to me a Jordan Love game. I want Jordan Love just to go nuclear like he did against Dallas. There's no reason he can't. This offense matches up very well with the defense, as both Jacob and I just talked about as well. So to me, this is a Jordan Love game, and if he can go out and outplay Caleb Williams, which I think he will, that to me is the difference in the game, and I feel very confident that he can go out and do that, which gives me, again, in kind, that confidence going into this game. I should mention, and I have a feeling this is going to go back and forth quite a bit. I know it already has. I saw one article that said the Packers were favorites. I'm looking at one site right now. It is the money line is literally -110 for both teams as of right now. The Packers spread is +1.5 at -122, and the Bears is -1.5 +102. So this is, as of right now, as we're recording this, about as even of a line as you could possibly get. It does say that about 70% of the bets placed so far have been on Chicago. Doesn't really matter. That's not what decides games. But this is, at least from the odds maker standpoint, an insanely even game. And that's really what we've seen all year from these two teams. I wholeheartedly believe that this could go either way, and I cannot wait for this matchup. It is going to have a major big fight feel, and it's going to be one of those where it feels like every single play matters. And it just like we're going to be living and dying by every little 5-yard pickup, 5-yard loss, whatever it might be. It's going to feel like that could be the difference. And turnovers are just going to be beyond massive. It's time. The Bears have to run out of turnover luck at some point, and the Packers are due for some damn turnover luck. So let this be the game where Green Bay finally gets the turnover luck over Chicago. It's just got to be time.
Yeah, they had maybe today was the start, right? Like you had that weird sack fumble where like Brosmer trips and then it turns into a strip sack because he just stands up, assuming that one of Green Bay's guys had touched him, and it turns into a fumble. So maybe that's like the start. I don't know about you guys. If you guys were watching the Bears-Lions game, I fully expected Chicago to block that last kick and return it for a touchdown. That's just the way that really the Bears minds. Shout out Vince Costa, but he calls it Bears football. Just block kicks, tipped passes that are intercepted. intercepted return for touchdowns. Like, it feels like anything like that that could happen does happen, and it's for them.
No more. This is the end. They got their regular season run. Cute. Nice story. Now it's Packers time. Now it's time for Big Brother to take back over, get a win in Chicago, and just remind Bears fans that we're still the biggest pain in the ass that you could possibly imagine. You're going to hate us forever. Grant, any other thoughts on Packers-Bears before we talk about this beautiful Packers-Vikings game? I know you're dying to talk Packers-Vikings.
I probably have stronger takes on just the season that we just concluded comparative to the Bears. I mean, I haven't really thought about the specific game too much. It's just, if Caleb throws you one, you have to catch it. Like, when you guys are talking about turnover luck, that's what I'm saying. Like, they just have to catch the ball. And it starts mostly with Xavier McKinney. Like, we talk about a defense now that's without Micah Parsons and Wyatt. And, well, what do you want Jeff Hafley to do? Well, I want their all-pro safety to go get a ball and create a possession. I thought of this today as they were paying tribute to Harrison Smith, a dude who could just go get a ball and buy his offense an extra possession. Like, that's what I want to see from Xavier McKinney. So that's something I'm looking for, I guess, and thinking about as you guys talk about turnover luck.
Time for playmakers to make plays. No question about it. We talked about on offense having opportunities. The defense will be in position to make a couple of those plays. Ketanu Ladapo had one again today. He couldn't pick up. So they've been allergic to him again. No more time to make those come to fruition in January, at least in postseason January, since it didn't exactly happen today. But I'm ready for it. Luck's going to turn. Packers get the turnovers. Bears don't. And hopefully that can be a huge difference in this game. Let's talk a little bit about Packers-Vikings. I want to start with our Luigi's Pizza player of the game. Best of luck. Who is your player of the game from this gorgeous Packers-Vikings game that we're all going to want to remember for as long as we remain on this earth?
Baron Sorrell, 8 tackles, won his first ever full sack. He recovered the fumble that I just mentioned that might be the start of the Packers' generational luck of turnover luck on the Super Bowl run that's about to take place here. But you talk about I'm not one to overreact to a game that is meaningless in the standings, all that kind of stuff, right? Baron Sorrell made more plays today than Sean Gary has in 2 months. Green Bay is looking potentially for some juice to add to their pass rush. Could they find that by more snaps of Baron Sorrell? Probably not Colin Oliver, but maybe. And Brenton Cox, who all three were pretty disruptive, all things considered today. Instead of some of the holdovers like Gary, to a lesser extent, I think Barre, players of that effect. But I mean, in order to replace Micah Parsons, we've talked about this since, you know, mid-December, that is a all hands on deck proposition. And those guys that I just mentioned are included in that. And Sorrell, it wasn't just in the passing game either. Like, he made a big stop on a 3rd-and-1 run play. I thought the run defense was much more competitive today. Now, Minnesota does not have Derrick Henry. That is a big reason why Baltimore was as good as they were a week ago. But yeah, I mean, when I was thinking of Luigi's Pizza in the middle of the game, it was definitely Baron Sorrell, who was one of the few, I think, standout performances on the day.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, whether you're starting a new routine or making player picks for the very first time, trying something new can be difficult. But in life and on Prize Picks, it always feels good to be right. And with high-pressure playoff matchups every weekend and elite hoops action every night, the action never stops. And Prize Picks lets you take control. Now, I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. This football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of game has been a super fun part of each football weekend. And listen, I get we're all having withdrawals from our fantasy leagues being over with, so this is the perfect time to stay in fantasy game mode by using Prize Picks every single week. And if you haven't checked lately, Prize Picks is now available in all 50 states. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And again, make sure that you're using that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right. So you know what I have no time for in my life anymore? Irritation. And I really don't have time for neck irritation. Now, I've tried just about every form of razor that you could possibly imagine. And no matter what, there always seems to be some sort of issue or irritation that comes from them. That was until I switched to Harry's Plus. Harry's Plus gives you a barbershop quality shave with German engineered blades that are each honed at 3 different angles to cut hair evenly without tugging. These blades are optimized to glide smoothly and easily, and every cartridge includes a lubricating strip with aloe and vitamin E to calm skin while you shave. And the best part is how affordable it is. Now, Harry's controls the entire process from steel to shelf, and they are able to keep the cost low because of it. So why pay $30 for refills when Harry's gives you better blades for a fraction of that? And right now, for a limited time, our listeners can get the Harry's Plus trial set for only $10 at harrys.com/packaday. This set includes the all-new Harry's Plus razor, one refined five-blade cartridge, a two-ounce foaming shave gel, and a travel cover to protect your blades on the go. Just head to harrys.com/packaday to claim this offer, and after your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Packaday sent you.
Daniel Whelan, I guess, like, he hit some nukes and he should have a fresh leg after the last couple weeks. He just hasn't been used much. He's a good punter. They have a really good punter. So I guess if this becomes a field position battle at any point on Saturday or in any playoff game, like, I feel good about that. Less so about their ability to cover and cover without committing penalties. But Daniel Whelan, which is kind of a lame cop-out answer if you're talking about how good the punter was, but I think that's just about all we can take away from this game today.
I think those are the two right answers, to be honest. I'd go Baron Sorrell as well. Just a quick shout out to Chris Brooks, who on a day where you couldn't get anything going, like 13 for 61 is a pretty solid performance on the ground, all things considered, when your offense literally can't do anything and you can't run block up front and you've got a backup offensive line and tight ends who can't block really well. And it's just a nightmare to try to do anything. So 13 for 61, solid. But I'm going Baron Sorrell as well. I was super impressed. Just a real quick aside on that. I'm curious both of your thoughts. So I would assume you're going to get five defensive ends for this game against Chicago. I would bet that you keep five defensive tackles just to keep the extra beef inside. So we can make all the jokes, but Rashawn Gary is going to be active for this game. Kingsley Enagbare, LVN are both going to be active. I would be stunned if Aaron Mosby is not active, especially with all the injuries as of late on teams and knowing how important he is to special teams units. I think he de facto gets a spot. So you get one spot, theoretically, between Brenton Cox, Baron Sorrell. If you want to make the argument for Colin Oliver, you could. But I think I lean towards Sorrell. I think I kind of want to give, although, you know, Cox is probably a little bit better against the run. So maybe that matters. Sorrell could give you a little bit more on special teams, maybe. So would Oliver, maybe. But I don't know. That's a really interesting decision. Anyone?
Yeah. I think that, oh, man, that's the hard part of the roster crunch, right? Because, like, I guess the good news is you're only going to have two quarterbacks active and you don't have to fiddle around with some of that stuff. But you look, on that defensive line. Maybe one way that they add a sixth defensive end is if they consider Van Ness a de facto defensive tackle. Okay. That's something they've kicked him inside a couple times this year to do that. They could do that. And the reality when it comes to Green Bay's defensive tackle group is it's Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, and the rest of the guys, with all due respect to them, like, you could replace them with three other guys in other spots, and I probably wouldn't know too much of the difference. When it comes to that, I thought Jonathan Ford was okay on first glance today, which maybe could help them some. Obviously, Nazir Stackhouse, Warren Brinson. Brinson was disruptive against Chicago the first time they played. Until today, the only sack since Parsons got injured was wiped out by Brinson's face mask of Caleb Williams. So, yeah, that's something where I wouldn't be surprised fully if they went pick one of the big guys, whether it's Stackhouse, Ford, whoever. And three other guys, so Brinson, Wooden, and Brooks, and then Van Ness is your quote-unquote fifth defensive tackle, to give them two other guys. If that is the case and that happens, I think Colin Oliver is your guy who sits on the bench. I know that there are a lot of people really excited about Colin Oliver, but he's played one game of football and had like one full week of practice since last season, and he got injured last season. He's been working through some stuff throughout the year. I think he got injured again during the season was what I feel like I gathered some of that today. I'd have to clarify that with some of my notes and stuff. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's the route they go, because for whatever reason, they've been content to go light at defensive tackle despite not having, you know, the strong. It's not like they have Kenny Clark, TJ Slayton, and Devontae Wyatt like they did a year ago where you feel really good about their first three.
No, I'm right there with you too. Greg, do you have a take on it?
I would just say go with whoever's better against the run, because I don't think that any of them are getting it to the quarterback anyways. Like, that's a pessimistic way to view it. But like that bottom of the rotation guy, I don't know that I think they're getting to the quarterback and getting Caleb Williams on the ground anyway. So just go with whoever you feel can give you a better chance to stuff the run. That's what I would do.
there's an interesting piece of Colin Oliver of like at least having the speed to maybe chase down a Caleb Williams. But I agree with Jacob. I don't think that that's the route they'll go. And I very much expect Colin Oliver to be inactive for this game. But that's a decision they'll have to make. Two of the three of us agree, Baron Sorrell, the player of the game for Green Bay. That brings us to our Habish Rotier injury report from this game. Two players were injured, Javon Bullard and Bo Melton. I want to have the Javon Bullard conversation. It does sound like, however, Javon Bullard mostly dodged a bullet. Javon Bullard said it was a slight hyperextension. Both he and Matt LaFleur downplayed it. Doesn't sound like it's going to be anything serious. Hopefully nothing lingers and he can go this week. Be a really interesting scenario if he couldn't, of who plays in the slot, because Nate Hobbs is now out for the year and Bullard is your other slot guy. Do you put Keyshawn Nixon back there with Diggs and Valentine on the outside? Do you use Ketanji LaDapo? I'm not sure exactly what route they would go, but it's not Javon Bullard. I know that if he were to be hurt. So hopefully he's going to be okay to go. And then Bo Melton, who was it also a knee injury? Do you guys remember? It was a knee injury, right? No word yet, at least that I've seen, on the severity of his injury. It's an interesting one where at first thought you're probably like, all right, well, that's a survivable one if he can't go this week. But man, you're probably your number four corner right now based on the depth of the cornerback position. He's your number six wide receiver, and you know he's the number four corner.
No, I'm just saying, man, that's a really I don't understand how you end up in that spot, but that's a philosophical conversation.
No, I know. And then number six wide receiver, and he's on the kick return unit. He's a gunner. He's a jammer. He does everything on special teams. So if he can't go, he does fill a few different of those roster spots. So that'll be interesting. So we'll have to kind of keep an eye on that, but. Luckily, Javon Bullard seems like he's going to be okay. I thought it was a ridiculous decision to have him, Evan Williams, or Jaden Reed ever in this game. I thought they handled everything else exactly the way that they were supposed to in this game. But if you have to put Jaden Reed out there, just go two wides. I don't care. I don't care if it's Luke Musgrave as the third wide receiver. I don't care if it's Matt Orzech as the third wide receiver. Shouldn't be out there. And then at safety. And I know he's like, well, we got to go when they match up. First of all, no, you don't. Like, I don't care if they're in five wide receivers. Go 4-3, go 3-4, go goal line defense. I do not care. I don't care if you lose 100-0. You are not required to match up on defense. And I don't even feel like JJ McCarthy or Max Brommer is probably going to take advantage of it to any real extent anyway. And the other thing is, even if you do want to match up, so you've got Jonathan Baldwin and Ketanji LaDapo, who should have been the safeties all game long. You've got outside corners. They use Jalen Simpson as an outside corner, Bartholomew as an outside corner. And now in nickel, you've got to bring in an extra defensive back, right? I would much rather have Carrington Valentine go out there. I'd rather have Keyshawn Nixon go out there. Or you could use Trayvon Diggs. Or again, just stay in 4-3. I do not care. But there never should have been a way where Javon Bullard or Evan Williams were in that game. I thought that was a bit of malpractice. Same thing with Jaden Reed on the other side. I get you can only have so many inactives, but you are not required to play certain formations on the field in this game. You did not care. You weren't even trying to go for a touchdown, onside kick, two-point conversion, recovery at the end. You're just trying to get points on the board. I promise you, you do not have to match up with their defensive or with their alignment. Just play whatever the hell you want and don't put guys that matter. Your one goal in this game is do not get guys that matter hurt. And you failed at that goal because you put Javon Bullard and a couple other players in positions to get hurt. And of course, because this is the Packers 2025-2026 season, if you put anybody in a compromising situation, they're going to get hurt. And that's exactly what happened. But thankfully, it seems like Bullard, survived anything major. But yeah, I don't know. If you guys feel different, let me know. But I was pretty pissed off about seeing any of those three in the game.
That was the one thing that I thought as you're talking. Sorry, Jay, I'll just go really quickly. The one thing that I thought when you were talking is, and of course that happened because that's just how the season has gone, right? Like they had one guy on the field who it's like, man, you'd rather not have him out there. And that was the one guy who got hurt. So you're absolutely right. Like that was my thought. That's just how this 2025-2026 season has gone.
Yeah. And the way they handled the whole thing, like, I mean, LaFleur said after the game that like if Jordan Love had gone in the game, they were not going to attempt to pass. So can you imagine just the gong show that becomes where like eventually the other team is going to figure that out. And you said at the end of the game, like I thought it was strange that LaFleur called a timeout with 1 second left to kick a field goal instead of just letting the clock run. Like I'm not actually suggesting this is sarcasm, but like did you have money on Green Bay plus 13.5 and you needed those 3 points at the end of the game? Like I between Jordan Love being the backup, there's no reason that should have happened at all. Like you have 27 defensive ends and 85 cornerbacks. Cut one of them and sign Desmond Ridder, or sign Jamon Johnson to the active roster and elevate Desmond Ridder, whatever it is you got to do. But there's no reason Jordan Love should have been the backup for today's game. And then the guys that you're talking about, like you said, you're not trying to win the game. Like, that's the part of the entire game. Is I know that there's this sense of pride and professional football and all that good stuff that you want to put your best foot forward. Well, you didn't. Like, you didn't. You started your third string quarterback, who was on the practice squad until a week ago by choice, and then basically admitted, both of them, the coach and the quarterback, in their post-game pressers, that they were kind of just trying to survive. Because as soon as Brian Flores heard earlier in the week that Clayton Tune was going to start, he drew up every seven-man pressure that he could think of. And Clayton Tune, or you know what, to be honest with you, Jordan Love might have struggled with some of those pressures that they had dialed up today. But add in the fact that the guys that played in front of Clayton Tune today, a couple guys had some nice moments. Jacob Monk, who I thought was okay at center. Jordan Morgan was pretty good at left tackle. The left guard, you can tell why he's on the practice squad. And, yeah, you know, with all due respect to him, you can figure that out pretty quickly and pretty easily. Like, they just didn't stand a chance. And then, I mean, again, this would have been the second season in a row that you're playing a guy who does not need to be playing, and he gets injured and now potentially misses a game. Now, the good news is Javon Bullard, and granted, players can say stuff, but Javon Bullard did say himself he's fine. I heard him say it to us, and I heard him say it to somebody he was talking to as he was leaving. Matt LaFleur said that it feels like he came out of it okay. They'll have an update today, as you guys are listening to some of this stuff. So Bullard's okay. Bullet dodged, but should have never come to that situation. Like, we are sitting there the whole game going, why is Evan Williams in the game? Evan Williams just came back from an injury last week. He's probably still a little hobbled. No need for him to be playing. Like, I'm totally fine with giving up because Isaiah McDuffie is covering him in the slot because of what you said, Andy. They didn't match personnel, and just so be it. Like, it didn't matter if you lost this game 34-3 or 16-3. You weren't trying to win it anyways. So if your goal is to keep the guys off the field, keep them off the field.
I think the points at the end, somebody pointed this out. I just double checked it really quick. I don't think Matt's ever been shut out in his career.
Has not.
So, yeah. So I think that was the one little, being able to continue to say that he's never been shut out as head coach.
Do you think there was anything? I saw someone tweeted something at me that kind of made me laugh. Like, I thought Flores probably ran some stuff he didn't necessarily have to run today, like 100%. Exotic blitzes, bringing guy. And I wonder if part of Matt LaFleur was like, okay, you want to do that to my third string guy? Well, then screw you. We're going to kick a field goal just because we can. Like, I probably not, but the thought of it at least was entertaining to me. So I thought it meant.
That's why I had no interest in Jordan seeing the field in this game as a quarterback, is because, of course, Flores is going to be a madman. Like, it would have shocked me if there was a seven-man pressure every single time if Jordan was in the game, just to hit him as many times as possible in this one. Nothing would have surprised me. So, of course, Flores is going to do that. There's no question about it. And, of course, when you've got a third-string quarterback, they're going to try to nuke him too. So, no surprise.
And he's interviewing for a head coaching job. Yeah. During this game as well. So, like, he can go to the Raiders and say, I just shut down the Packers offense, and that was my defense throughout the entire, like, look at what I did in the last two games against Detroit and Green Bay. Like, people know who Brian Flores is, but the more that you can put on there that's undeniable, which with some of the stuff that's in Flores's past, he might need some stuff like that potentially to be a tiebreaker kind of thing. I don't think that's going to hurt. And if nothing else, he's trying to make himself more money. He's going to be a free agent. So the bidding war for him to be a head coach or Dallas's defensive coordinator or to stay in Minnesota, like, he's going to make some money this offseason.
Owners are stupid too. Remember Jerry Jones thought that Mike McCarthy really watched every single play from the previous season. And then the press conference, like, I may have, you know, not exactly watched every single play. So yeah, of course you embellish as much as you can in a interview. And especially as a head coaching candidate, if you can say that you shut out Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, some owners aren't going to do their homework and see that it was Clayton Tune starting. And so hell yeah, absolutely put that on there. But no, there's no doubt he was going to do that. But hopefully Bullard, and as Jacob mentioned, he said it after the game that Bullard is okay. He's good to play this week. Bill Melton's probably the one to keep an eye on. And that might be, again, if Matt's right, where all the inactive players that were hurt are good to go and Javon Bullard is good to go, we might be looking at a week. Besides the 763 players that are on the actual IR that can no longer play, besides those, we might be looking at an injury report that is primarily based on Bo Melton this week. And if that's the case, then they got through this game for the most part about as good as could be expected and not having any catastrophic injuries that could cost them this week.
And that'd be as healthy as they've been since Denver, right? Unless I'm forgetting somebody. Like that's about as good as you could hope for, again, considering all the guys on IR. They'd be in a good spot. Like you would have the most healthy version of this team possible then going into Chicago, the healthiest version they've had in a while.
We'll be right back. A couple other things I wanted to get to from that Packers-Vikings game. We did get the debut of Trayvon Diggs. Jacob, we'll start with you. He didn't play, I mean, it was like 30-some snaps, I want to say, something in that range. So he played a decent amount. I thought for the most part, held up well, made a couple tackles in open space, which is good to see. Didn't get tested all that often, but I thought for first impressions, for the most part, looked good.
Yeah, it was sticky in coverage on a third down. Might have been a penalty, but, you know, in the words of Michael Jordan, did they call it? So they didn't call it, so it wasn't a flag. I think that was against Jefferson on a third down, and J.J. McCarthy threw the ball back to LaGrange Park, Illinois, on the given play, so it wasn't close regardless of what happened. So, you know, this is a team that they came into the year insisting they liked the cornerbacks that they had, and by the end of the season, I think they've been proven that that was probably foolish to have that much faith in the trio that they had. They might argue back that the injuries hurt things, but Matt LaFleur was asked after the game if Diggs could start next week against Chicago, and he said he's not going to rule anything out, which to me was like, yes, he's starting against Chicago. Like, if you're going to get – I think Green Bay's taking a swing on the upside of Nixon's going to start, okay? So across from him, we're going to go with a guy who can cover a little bit, isn't a great tackler, might draw a penalty or two. You know, that's – Valentine not as flag happy maybe as Diggs, but if you're going to go with those things as a flawed player, we're going to take the risk that maybe Caleb Williams throws the ball in his range and our guy catches it instead of theirs. So with as starved as this Packers team is for takeaways, it's kind of why when Diggs was let go and there was some rustling that Green Bay could claim him, I was like, sure, throw the dart. Like, would you rather him play than Jalen Simpson or Shamar Bartholomew or somebody like that? No disrespect to those guys, but it was pretty clear. Jordan Addison ran a sluggo on Jalen Simpson, and it was very clear who the NFL player was and who the practice squad player was on that play. That's what I will say. So is Diggs going to be a shutdown corner and all-pro player and remind us of the days of prime Jair Alexander? No. Is he Green Bay's best chance to win right now with how the roster is presently constructed and everything? I think the answer to that question is yes, and I think today was a really good step toward that. He said all the right things since he's been here. Only for a short period of time, but I think this is something where I think he knows he's auditioning for a job, not just in 20, you know, the rest of this season, but beyond that as well. And he says everybody says they want to stay, but he says he wants to stay in Green Bay. So catch a pass or two from Caleb Williams and Sam Darnold, and let's see if they can keep you around for another season next year and drive Ross Uglum to more of his liquor cabinet.
Instant cult hero status if in the first playoff game he gets a pick six against Caleb Williams or something like that. Just instant cult hero status if Diggs can do something like that. Now, I don't think you claim him with the intention of putting him on the bench. You don't pay $500,000 for just one game, basically, for him to chill. And they're basically desperately trying to bench Carrington Valentine against the Ravens, and they benched him, you know, for Kamal Haddon, and Haddon gets hurt. They benched him for Nate Hobbs gets hurt. And so they had to just keep playing him. They don't pick him up and again, aggressively try to bench Carrington Valentine the week before just to play Valentine in this game. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. Maybe Valentine gets the start, but I have a hunch it's going to be Diggs and Nixon, like you said, Jacob, with Bullard in the slot and then, you know, Evan and X back at safety.
Diggs has mostly been bad, very bad this year. He was cut for a reason. I mean, Schottenheimer talked about how it was a couple reasons, but like he hasn't been a good football player. The interesting thing about cornerbacks, and if you go back and you watch the Packers 2010 run, just for example, like Tremont Williams is a fine corner and Sam Shields is a fine corner, but those guys got hot for three or four games and they rose their level a little bit. I think corners are a lot like relievers in baseball, where it's like an average player or a player who's just pretty good can get white hot and like make a huge difference in a sample of small games. And if Trayvon Diggs gets one interception against Chicago and a big tackle on a third and short, like, that's kind of all they need him to do if everything else goes according to plan. There's a chance he does none of those things, but I think there's a greater chance he does those things than Carrington Valentine based on what we've seen. So sure. And again, if you're relying on your number two corner to win you a football game, you're probably drawing dead anyways. But I think the tools and the experience is there where it's like, let's see if we can't get lucky and get a great two-game stretch with a couple great moments that helps us win from a player who's done it before. Like, I can get behind that line of thinking.
I'm with you that cornerback play is volatile, and you can see, you know, ups and downs through cornerback play. I will disagree with you about Tremont Williams and Sam Shields in 2010, my friend. Tremont Williams was a near shutdown corner in 2010, and I will not have it spoke of any other way. He was an absolute machine.
He was very good. I probably undersold him, and he got really hot from an interception.
That is also true.
Like, he just started to see the ball go through the hoop. So not to undersell how good Tremont was, the hot streak came from the interception specifically.
And in that playoffs in particular, he was unbelievable, unbelievable run throughout that postseason. So that part I do agree with you with. As far as just kind of to wrap up this Packers Vikings game, unless you guys have any other direction that you want to go in, Clayton Tune and the Packers passing offense had negative passing yards in this game. The one thing I do want to ask just really quick, it sounds again like Malik Willis will be able to be back for this week and be the backup. If for some reason he's not, can you go into this game with Clayton Tune as the backup quarterback? Because for me, the answer is no. And I don't know who's out there. Tim Boyle is out there. I do know that much. But I don't know who's legitimately out there that you could take a real look at to bring in at this point. You obviously have Desmond Ridder as well, but I don't think you could go into this game with Clayton Tune as the backup quarterback really ever again for the franchise, for the remainder of the Packers, you know, existence. I don't think I need to see Clayton Tune in green and gold, you know, in actual dressed for a game ever again.
I'll be nice before I say something mean. I will give him the benefit of the doubt from the standpoint. Sure. Like I said, the skeleton crew around him did him no favors.
No.
I don't know how much it would have mattered if he had Watson and Dobbs in the starting line. And like, if they had Jacobs, they may have never attempted a pass the way that game is going. But I wrote a story earlier this week that has aged as poorly as anything I've written. And that was that this was kind of an audition for Clayton Tune to say,
you're not wrong in the fact that it was an audition. I mean, he failed the audition, but it absolutely was his opportunity to say, hey, I belong in the discussion for QB2 next year. No question about it.
And I am no quarterback scout. I am no NFL scout. I don't know my rear end from a hole in the ground a lot of different days, but I do not understand how a team that picked out, and I know there's only so many quarterbacks in the world, I understand that, but a team that picked out Jordan Love based on tools and traded for Malik Willis based on those same tools ended up with saying, like, Taylor Algersma, in my opinion, is better
more tools
than Clayton Tune. Like, if you're telling me who should be the backup next week if Malik Willis can't play, it will probably be Tune. Should it be? I would rather have Desmond Ridder. I think they would be more effective if Jaden Reed was running wildcat snaps with Josh Jacobs. Like, I mean, if they threw 10 incomplete passes out of 10 next week, they would have more net passing yards than what they had today, like you mentioned off the jump. So, like I said at the beginning, it took me one pass attempt to realize, like, oh, it's not often you see a bad quarterback play in Green Bay. Like, I'm thinking of guys that have gotten regular season action. Like, Brett Hundley was an NFL quarterback. DeShone Kizer was not good, but he was an NFL quarterback. Joe Callahan is the last guy I could think of where I saw it was like, this guy does not belong. Like, at all. It is rare that JJ McCarthy and Max Brosmer can both play in the same game, and neither of them is the worst quarterback who stepped on the field in that given day. So if Willis cannot go and Jordan were to get hurt for some reason, like I said, I am 100% on the give it to Desmond Ridder and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think you can go with Tune again. Grant?
I mean, what's the nightmare scenario? You're up 7 minutes you're up 7 points with 4 minutes to go and Jordan Love gets hurt and you need a guy to get like one first down and not puke all over himself. And then you have to bring in Tune and he pukes all over himself. Like, that's the scenario where this would matter, right? You know, put it this way, where Desmond Ridder versus Clayton Tune or Clayton Tune versus someone else would matter. But knowing how this Packers season has gone, that's the situation that would come up. So you're probably right. I just don't know how much better the alternative would be in Ridder, especially considering he's been here for like less than a week.
Just so you know, if that happens, you're off the podcast forever. So just want you to know that. So if that exact scenario happens, you're out, it's done, it's over. We don't speak it into existence. All right, Grant, this is your time to shine because you are radio narrative guy. So I'm excited for this. Packers 2025 season. You're obviously a lot more than that. I say that with all the kindness in my
heart. No, I laugh. That's exactly what I am. No.
Packers 2025 regular season is in the books. They end up on a 4-game losing streak. Your mileage may vary on how much that you care about the last one. They end up at 9-7-1 on the season. What are your takeaways? What's the narrative? What's the spin on the 2025 Packers regular season?
Well, I think they should have won this division 3 weeks ago, first and foremost. And I think the Bears losing again in week 18 just frustrates me more because it feels like they left so much meat on the bone this season. I think finishing with 9 wins is about as bad as they could have done, barring some abject catastrophe. Like Jordan Love misses the whole season after being hurt in week 1. And I'm not trying to, I know they're a playoff team and it's the 7th seed, but it's a playoff team that's better than a lot of the league and a lot of fan bases and teams who kill for that. I get it. I just think that's about as bad as they could have done, barring a season that complete where the wheels completely fell off.
Let me ask you something just really quick.
Yeah.
Jordan Love done for the season and Malik Willis is healthy for the entire year, or all the injuries that the Packers have had to suffer with Watson, Reed, Tucker Kraft, Micah Parsons, et cetera, plus Jordan Love missing a couple games. I'm not so sure if the choice was obviously like Jordan Love's done, but everyone else is healthy or what we got. I'm not sure that Malik with the, you know, health of the rest of the roster intact doesn't win 10 games. It's an interesting conversation.
It is. Well, and what's frustrating is like, an optimistic Packers fan would probably say, well, they're the 7th seed and they won 9 games, but consider all the injuries. And I'd say that's fair in the Denver game and maybe the Baltimore game, but what about Cleveland and Carolina and Dallas and Philly? It's just a season where the entire schedule is littered with games they should have won. And yes, the injuries played a role for sure, but this should be so much better than a 9-win team. So much better. If you would have told Packers fans that Thursday night, that they beat Washington and, you know, just a couple days after the Detroit win, you're going to win 9 games this year, they'd say, are you like, I truly wouldn't have believed it. I would not have been able to wrap my mind around
December,
that.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know, man, I think it's really disappointing. And I just wonder for the anti Matt LaFleur crowd, and I really like Matt LaFleur, but if I was an anti Matt LaFleur guy, I'd say, okay, well then who's to say that next year, there's not going to be another 3 or 4 games on their schedule where we're left saying, if not for those games, we'd be the division winner. We'd be the 3 seed instead of the 7. Because that's kind of started to feel like what this team is. Really good, but bake in 2 or 3 games every year that they lose for no reason, and they're the 7 seed instead of the division champ at the end of the year. That's the difference.
They went – well, we don't know for sure as we're recording this right now. The Steelers are down 10-3 at halftime of this game. If that score stands and Baltimore wins – and Pittsburgh loses, they will have faced playoff teams. Carolina, loss. Philly, loss. Chicago, win. Denver, loss. Chicago, loss. Baltimore, loss. So 1-5 in 6 playoff teams, with the 6 playoff teams that they faced. So if they're 1-5 in those, that means they went 8-2-1 against non-playoff teams. For the second consecutive year, they are non-playoff team win merchants. For the most part, they've taken care of business against non-playoff teams. But you can argue the loss to Cleveland, the tie to Dallas, and the loss to Minnesota. Not again, they weren't trying in this one. But if they probably beat Minnesota if they're actually trying to win in this one, would be my guess. But you know, if they can, you know, pick up an extra win or two in those games, they've got the opportunity to win the division still. And so they either need to do much better against their tough opponents, which once again, they did not this year, or they need to really take advantage of their non-playoff opponents, which against Cleveland, Dallas, and Minnesota at the end, they did not.
Saturday at 7:00.
Saturday, 7:00. Interesting. Look at that. All right. I would not have expected a Saturday game.
Neither would I. I was thinking Sunday for, you know, 3:30 where the Eagles and Niners ended up, but that is where that ended up. But to get us back on track and further the point of Grant, and I wouldn't put myself in the camp of anti Matt LaFleur, and I'm not somebody who I'm never going to say that a coach should be fired. I don't care if it's Matt LaFleur. I don't care if it's Joe Barry. I don't care if it's Richie Kotite from the 1990s Philadelphia Eagles. That's just not the way that I operate. I think that there's so many other things at play that I'm just maybe too sensitive to. But that being said, Green Bay's record total since losing to San Francisco with today's loss is 37-30-1 since that loss to San Francisco with Rodgers in the playoffs. 37-30-1. They've won more than nine games once, and they've won one playoff game since 2020, since losing the championship game to Tampa Bay, obviously the one against Dallas here a couple of years ago. I don't know if Green Bay loses to Chicago on Saturday night, that will be a five-game losing streak, including two losses to Chicago and games that, like Grant has mentioned, that Carolina, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Dallas, like there's every game that you can kind of point to and say, man, one play here or there, and maybe this catastrophic mistake doesn't happen and they could have won that one. What I've been saying for weeks, mostly on this show, is if Matt LaFleur does indeed get let go at the end of the season, him and his team will have given Ed Policy and Brian Gutekunst, whoever it is ultimately making that decision, plenty of ammunition to do so. And I do not understand I understand he's a really good coach. I'm not suggesting that he's not. I think he's a really smart offensive mind. I think there's a lot of feathers in his cap as far as, you know, Malik Willis and the way the offense is able to function, the development of Jordan Love, the revitalization of Aaron Rodgers, all that stuff. All that stuff is great. But I also don't understand the idea that it's completely asinine to question, is this the coach to get you to a Super Bowl championship? Like you mentioned, they have won seven games since starting the season 2-0. And with two wins that we thought were going to be some of the biggest wins of the season, I think, what'd you say, if Baltimore wins, they won one game against a playoff team this year. And it's not like they played Seattle and Los Angeles and the 49ers. Some of those playoff teams they lost to are Carolina and Baltimore, two of the most average teams that are going to make the postseason. So I think there are plenty of fair questions to be had about Matt LaFleur and his job security, especially if they lose this game on Saturday against Chicago. If they win and then get blown out a couple of weeks from now in Seattle, then I think those questions kind of reopen themselves. But the idea that it's a slam dunk, he's Bill Belichick with seven Super Bowl rings or something like that. I think I read only one coach ever has won a championship having been here as long as LaFleur has been here, if he hadn't won one prior. Some of those trends are hard to ignore. And if you look at the way that even all the games, you talk about those games, Grant, that they've lost this year, aren't you sitting there at some point during the season going like, man, I feel like Green Bay has lost this game several different times in the last 7 years. Like the Chicago game, that's a little 2014 NFC championship-y, but Cleveland, Dallas being a tie, Philadelphia, Carolina, all those games were just kind of like lifeless, odd performances. And then you've got some really weird, like they're playing the Giants and they win by 7 points and need two late turnovers to seal that game. It's like, you should beat them by 21 points. I know it's the NFL. I know it's a week-to-week league. I know all the things that we say every single week, but I just think something I said last week on the show is that I feel like this is a team that is missing something. And maybe I'm giving too much credence to some stuff like this, but I do feel like that Liam Cohen, Ben Johnson, Mike Vrabel, some of these guys just have an edge to them of they not only want to beat you, they want to smash your face in the dirt and rub your nose in it after the fact. And something as simple to me as Ben Johnson saying in the offseason that he really liked beating Matt LaFleur twice a season, and then LaFleur took the high road after he beat him the first time this year. To me, that would have been a good opportunity to kind of clap back a little bit. Or, you know, the other thing I've mentioned in recent weeks was the team not defending their quarterback when he gets hit in the helmet or dribbled off the floor in Denver, stuff like that. So maybe those things don't matter. You know, maybe the Packers go on this playoff run here in the next few weeks, but I just feel like something is missing. And I think there are going to be a lot of fair questions to be asked whenever this season ultimately ends, because here's a spoiler for the next segment. I am not picking the Packers to win the Super Bowl.
No spoiler needed. I think that's a fair assessment as of this point, but we'll see. You never quite know. I would say if you look at this schedule, I felt really good about the opening Detroit win. I felt really good about the opening Washington win in week two. I felt good about the Steelers win in Pittsburgh. I felt really good about that one. Minnesota, you win 23-6. Maybe not the perfect game. Love has 139 yards, but I still feel good about a 17-point win against Minnesota. I feel good about Detroit on Thanksgiving, going to Detroit, winning by 7 there. I feel good, even though it had some oddities with it too. 7-point win over Chicago. So out of a 17-game season, 6 of them I actually feel good about. That you obviously lose to the Browns, you tie the Cowboys. The Bengals game was actually one that you should have won by more. The Cardinals game should not have been as close as it was. Shouldn't have lost to the Panthers, lose to the Eagles. Like you said, barely get by the Giants, and then lose to Denver, Chicago, Baltimore, and Minnesota end the year. So I would say there's 6 games I felt good about on a 17-game schedule this year.
I think if Matt LaFleur gets let go, which I wouldn't expect, but the idea that we're not even allowed to talk about it, I think is insane. If he gets let go, I think Matt LaFleur, I think it would be warranted looking at the entire last however many years. I don't think he wouldn't be let go just because of this year. But if I was Matt LaFleur and all of a sudden I'm looking for my next job, I'd be thinking, damn, dude, like I want to go back and live in the reality where what I thought was about to be a runaway victory in Denver. They're finally hitting their stride. Biggest win of the year. And then it all just fell apart in that third quarter. Cause I think there is an alternate reality. We saw it, or at least I think I saw it. I'm trying not to cope, but like, I thought that was about to be the win of their year. And I thought, here we go. Like, this is the home stretch. They're playing their best ball. It's all falling into place. And then it just didn't happen for one reason or another. And that's not to excuse the Chicago loss, which is it's inexcusable. But I do think that alternate reality is out there. And I'm sure Matt LaFleur would be like, man, if I'm going to get fired, I would have at least liked to get fired with a healthy Micah Parsons and Tucker Kraft and all these other guys. And I totally get that.
We'll be right back. Fair. I think he's going to be back. I think he gets an extension, but I do think it's an interesting context of what happens in this wild card game. I mean, the narrative does change quite a bit. And even if it's just a difference of they lost in a last second field goal or they lost by 20, there's a different connotation there. And winning a playoff game or two, or again, losing in the first round, a huge different connotation there too. So I think this is a really big game for the franchise, for Jordan Love, for Brian Gutekunst, for Matt LaFleur. I think you need to pick up a wild card win here in a game where it's a coin flip. And I quite frankly still think you're, if not the better team, you're even, and this comes down to coaching, quarterbacking, and all the things that you should have an advantage on if you think you want the extension, etc. So I'm interested, I'm intrigued, and I want to see how this goes. And this Bears game, I think, is going to go a long way. And like I said, spinning the narrative one way or the other of what could happen, not even just this season, but moving forward for Matt LaFleur and this team as well. Really quick, couple last things before we get out of here. We do now know the Packers' opponents for 2026, their home games. Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, of course. The Atlanta Falcons, who just cleaned house, by the way. Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot are fired. They're out. That was the first firing, at least, that I've seen so far. So Atlanta, Carolina at home from the NFC South. Buffalo at home, which should be a really fun matchup. I would expect a lot of Bills fans at that game. Miami at home, Dallas at home, Houston at home. So they have 3 warm weather teams, Carolina as well, and Atlanta. So a lot of warm weather teams coming to Lambeau Field in Atlanta, Carolina, Miami, Dallas, and Houston. And then, again, the other ones, Detroit, Chicago, Minnesota, and Buffalo. On the road, Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, of course. New Orleans on the road, Tampa Bay on the road in the NFC South. New England and the New York Jets in the AFC East. And then the LA Rams is their other game. So that is their home road schedule. They do have one more home game next year. I did see somewhere, don't the Rams play in like Australia or something coming up this year? So we could have another version of, do we get Packers Rams in Australia next year? So I don't know if that's 1,000,000% true. I may have read that somewhere. So don't quote me on that, but I'm sure we're going to be on international game watch this off season. Once again, I don't think I want the Packers to have to go to Australia for a game, but that would be that would be the thing that now that they get an extra, they do have the extra home game though. So at least that would be a neutral game. So they'd have a very, home / neutral friendly schedule next year if that were to be the case. But any quick thoughts on the schedule for next year?
I just love some of those games. Buffalo and Green Bay is going to be fun. At New England against that team is going to be fun. And I don't like going to Tampa. I almost feel like I can mark that as a loss. no matter what they do this offseason. That just doesn't feel like a game that this Packers team would win. But I like a lot of those matchups. They're just fun home and away matchups next season that'll be exciting.
Rams do play in Australia, by the way. So Packers, Rams, Australia. Well, don't do it. Don't do it. Jacob?
Tampa flies right out of my hometown, so that's a cheap, easy road trip and potential family vacation for me. So I'm happy about that, I guess. But you always look forward to the home schedule, right? Who's coming here? Josh Allen hasn't played here since his first season as a starter, so now he's at like the peak of his powers. So I think that's definitely one you want to circle at least immediately. I will say this too. I retweeted Matt Schneidman's tweet about the home opponents and everything, and somebody said 9-8. And I was like, if you're making a prediction on the schedule right now, that's a choice. All I'm saying, you can decide if that's what, if I mean it's a good or bad one, but it's a choice.
Making any sort of prediction on the schedule at this point is absolutely absurd. Grant, what's your prediction for the schedule for next season? What's the Packers record? I'm just kidding.
No. 9-8.
It was Grant's burner who sent that to me. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Last couple things. Playoff matchups. Again, we now know Packers 7 p.m. Central Time. It's a Prime Video game. So if you don't have Prime and you're not in Green Bay, sign up for Prime. I'm assuming if you're in the Green Bay area, they're going to broadcast it somewhere locally. But it is a Prime Video game. So get your Prime subscription if you don't have it already. The early Saturday game, the opening card, if you will, for Packers Bears is Rams and Panthers. So Rams and Panthers, 3:30 p.m. Central Time on Saturday, followed by Packers Bears on Saturday Night Football. Noon Central on Sunday is Bills in Jacksonville, followed by 49ers Eagles at the 3:30 slot, and then Chargers and Patriots is the 7 p.m. Central game on Sunday Night Football, and Monday Night Football will be Texans and either the Ravens or the Steelers. So that is your full slate of games. Outside of Packers Bears, which game are you guys most looking forward to?
The Texans not graduating from the Saturday slot, by the way, only to slide into the Monday night slot is awesome. I love that. I'm excited to see what the Texans do, and I know I'm hardly alone in this. That kind of feels like they could sneaky just end up in the Super Bowl, and we look back and say, oh, well, look at how many games in a row they won down the stretch or how well they played. Like, that's a nasty team. So I think the Texans are the team I'm most interested to watch.
Jacob?
Yeah, Eagles, Niners, those two teams do not like each other is obviously one. Obviously, I've got the value on my own as well. But the other game is Chargers and Patriots. I think Jim Harbaugh against Mike Vrabel is like a football gods matchup for coaches and everything like that. Justin Herbert against Drake May. And I think that's a game that I just mentioned, rookie quarterback and well, the coach isn't making his debut in the playoffs. But I think the Chargers are going to win that game against New England. I think the Patriots are – I hate using the term fraudulent at this point in the season, because if you do make the playoffs at some point, you kind of have gotten what you've earned if they've won as many games as they have. But I think the Chargers defense, Jesse Minter. So we went over this earlier, but like, if you told me today that the Packers were going to be looking for a head coach, he would be on my short list. I think he's one of the best defensive coordinators in all of football. And obviously I worship the ground Jim Harbaugh walks on and voted for him for president in the most recent election. So, but in all seriousness, I do think that that is going to be the best game of the weekend, if not Eagles and Niners, like I mentioned at the jump.
I'm going to go. I actually really am looking forward to Jacksonville and Buffalo. I think that's a really fun matchup. I think Jacksonville's playing some really good ball, and there's so much pressure on Buffalo, and they have to go on the road. I think that's a really fun one as well. I mean, I think the worst one, of course, is Rams-Panthers, and the Panthers just beat them just a few weeks ago. That all of them are so freaking
intriguing. In the ultimate universe that Grant was talking about, that game was huge for the Packers getting the one seed. The Rams losing to the Panthers was so big for Green Bay getting the one seed. And then here we are.
That other universe is living their best lives with the Packers as the one seed right now, and Micah Parsons still healthy. I wish I was in that universe, but alas, here we are. Really, really quick, Grant's early Super Bowl prediction.
Texans and I still feel very Ramsy. I think I'll say Texans, Rams.
Who wins?
Texans, I guess. Okay.
Jacob?
Am I basic? Is that the trendy thing right now? To just be like, well, the Texans, name a better unit in football than the Texans defense. It's probably trendy and played out, but I kind of buy it. And they're hot. Like the Eagles last year, we look back and they're, oh my, it was the Eagles all along. Look how many games they won down the stretch.
If C.J. Stroud plays B-plus football, they go to the Super Bowl. Just B-plus football for C.J. Stroud, and they go to the Super Bowl.
He's capable of that. He's more than capable of that.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll go with Jaguars, Seahawks. I think Seattle's been the best team all year. I think it'll be them against the Rams for the NFC title. Spoiler alert, that means I think the Packers beat the Bears, because in order for that to happen, it works that way. But Mike McDonald's got that defense. They just shut down San Francisco, whose offense, like, they hadn't punted in 2 months or something like that coming into the game. Mike McDonald, I think, is a big game coach. You know, I am very worried about hitching my wagon to Sam Darnold, but I am refusing to live in a universe where Matthew Stafford gets to the Super Bowl twice and potentially wins it twice, and we have to live through the discourse of, well, you know, Matthew Stafford, he was actually better than Aaron Rodgers. He's got two rings and Aaron only has one. So the football gods are not going to allow that to happen. So I think Seattle gets there. Jacksonville, I think, is their offense at some point. At some point with Houston, I just think that Stroud is going to turn the ball over enough. But I could see them getting there. And I could easily see Jacksonville losing to Buffalo because Buffalo has Josh Allen. So, but I think the Jaguars are playing really, really well. I think Trevor Lawrence, this has been kind of his breakout party, so to speak, with all those guys. And I really like Liam Cullen as their head coach too.
Patriots over Rams. Patriots are not fraudulent. They're a good team. Drake May gets an early Super Bowl win in his career. Patriots beat the Rams. I kind of want to go Rams over Patriots. I could go either way. And I could honestly, well, the Rams, I think, will beat the Panthers. I actually do think the Patriots will beat, obviously, the Chargers, so I'm picking both those. But, like, if you told me the Chargers won that game, like, I wouldn't be stunned at all. I think that's, again, how amazing this postseason is going to be. But I'll take Patriots over Rams at this point in time. Guys, I've kept you long enough. Thank you so much. We obviously had a lot to go over with playoff stuff, end of the season stuff, a little bit of Packers-Vikings stuff. Jacob, final thoughts and plugs before we get you out of here?
Packers Bears, man. What more could you ask for? So I'm excited. Are you coming? Are you coming next week?
No, I don't do road games. So okay. I'll be here in the comfort of my office, pregame show, postgame show, halftime show, doing all that fun stuff and enjoying life, watching it on the big screen, getting everything spoiled by Wes Hodkiewicz and Matt Schneidman because the tweets come through before it happens on the TV. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to turn those alerts off during the game for the same reason. But I
turn my phone upside down sometimes. I try to turn my phone upside down.
So I will be in the press box of that litter box. I've heard it is the worst place in the world to be as far as covering a game goes. So I'm excited to experience that. And I live in Illinois, guys. So if any players are listening, as far as the Packers go, it would be really, really nice. I did not have to hear all offseason about how Chicago ended Green Bay season. That would be really super for me personally. So I know you guys care about my feelings above everything else. But, no, I'm excited. It's going to be fun. It's not been the season that I think we envisioned. I think you and I both were talking about booking flights to Santa Clara, especially after the first couple of games. And now that seems like an exercise in futility. But we'll see what happens, man. You know, the playoffs are fun. And I think all the teams, other than, you know, Carolina, I think Carolina is probably the only team in this playoff field that I don't think you could talk me into. Yeah, they could win a championship. I think all of those teams could play on Championship Sunday in both conferences. If Baltimore wins, I think that could be true of them more so than Pittsburgh. But I think it's as wide open as it's ever been in the league. So I'm excited to see what happens. And then I'm going to be really sad when it's over.
Grant?
I think it's a great matchup. Curly Lambeau and Vince Lombardi and George Halas are rolling in their graves at the thought of it being streamed exclusively on what used to just be an online bookstore, but that's fine. It's the NFL's oldest rivalry. It's fine. I'll enjoy very little of it, probably, unless the Packers win. And then when it's done, I'll enjoy it. That's how I will consume this game, which sounds different than the experience of both of you. The radio show, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6, if anyone wants to join. And by the way, this week, we add affiliates starting Monday, January 5th. We add affiliates in both Appleton and Oshkosh for the show. So it's Fox Valley. So that's exciting. But just follow my Twitter if you want to know where to find the radio show, at Wisco Grant.
Appreciate you guys a ton. This was a lot of fun. We had a lot to go over, and you guys made it super simple and fun. So I appreciate you guys a ton. Make sure to follow him at Jacob Westendorf on social media, at Wisco Grant down there. And you can find me at Andy Herman NFL, of course, at Packaday Podcast as well. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.